complexity, and they expose the problems, expose the root of the problems. They reveal God's answers and God's solutions to the problems. Justice in the kingdom of God is ultimately about what God's doing in the world to make right what's wrong, to stand for what's right, to do what's right, and to right what's wrong. And so, unsurprisingly then, what the scriptures say about justice is complex. Right? It's wise, it's layered, it's textured, it's deep, it's complex. And there's a ton of things the scriptures say about it. And so one of the challenges that we'll have in this series is to convey the various facets of the biblical picture of justice in a way that does, I don't want to use a pun, but does justice to the text itself, right? Does justice to the scriptures that faithfully represents the scriptures' teaching and yet is clear and concise enough to be helpful. We don't want to oversimplify because that's dangerous. That's like putting a blunt object in our hands when we need a scalpel, right? When the surgeon needs a scalpel. And so we don't want to oversimplify, but at the same time, we need to just be able to take this section by section and think through and build this picture. And so we tried to calibrate the right pace as well as carefully select the most important passages that are really going to build out this picture for us. Let me go ahead and just share kind of the game plan for today and how I want to approach this. Today is all about laying a foundation, exploring the foundations of the Bible story, going from the story of creation to Sinai, exploring those foundations to see it essentially a single point that justice is central to the purpose of God in His kingdom, and it is so from creation itself. And so the way we're going to go about this class or the sermon today, I want to spend three parts, right? The first part, I want to just lay out some preliminary concepts. That'll be short and quick. We're not going to do any textbook definitions, but just start to build sort of a word picture and start to bring some concepts to the table so that we can fill out our picture of justice and the biblical picture of justice. Part two is where I really want to spend the most time. I want to dig into the story of creation in Genesis 1 and see what Genesis 1 teaches us about justice. And then we're going to step back and just see how the story continues all the way to Mount Sinai and look at some strands there and see how that fills out that picture of justice as well. So, part one, preliminary concepts. Biblical justice is about retribution and restoration. Sometimes we may see one or different justice camps may see one side of that over the other, but understand the biblical picture of justice is concerned with both retribution against evil and restoration for the hurting, the suffering, and those kinds of things, raising up. So retribution and restoration, those are some things we need to have in our hearts and minds. Biblical justice is concerned with the oppressor and the oppressed, right? How do you deal with the one who is guilty of wrong, who's done injustice and violence to someone else or to people groups and that sort of thing? What about the person or the people who are oppressed, right? Biblical justice is concerned with both. Ultimately, biblical justice is concerned with what's right, right? And that idea of rightness is really going to be at the heart of our picture here. And this is all across our culture and our daily lives, right? Anything from, you know, you hear about human rights, right? You know, that's getting at that. We have a Bill of Rights, right? It's getting at, striking at that same heart. We'll say things like, that's not right. It's not fair. Or make it right, right? Again, all of that striking at the heart of the same ideas here, right? As we fill out our picture of biblical justice. Here's one that we need to see. Biblical justice is not pitted against grace. Sometimes I'll hear things like, God is just, but man, I'm thankful that He's also gracious, right? What we're doing there is we're saying justice and grace are in competition with one another, right? That it's almost as if there's two parts of God that are warring against the other part. And that's not at all how justice grows out of the scriptures. It's not justice versus grace, but it's gracious justice, right? When we see the picture of God's justice, This is grace, this is goodness, this is mercy, this is a blessing that the people of God pursue throughout the Bible story, right? And so that it's important that we see this piece. Most likely, if we're to err in this room, I'm guessing we maybe have that preconception sometimes that it's justice versus grace, but it's gracious justice. It's not justice versus mercy. It's merciful justice. And then finally, what I want to just start to bring is words that are connected together. We'll fill this word map out a little bit more, but one of the things you'll see in scriptures is justice and righteousness go together, right? They're often used in partnership. They're sometimes overlapping. Sometimes our Bibles will adjust the translations and even swap the translations a little bit. So understand, when we talk about justice, we talk about righteousness, and we're all sort of talking in the same world of what God is doing in the world. All right, that's part one. That's the quick part. Okay, let's open up, if you would, to Genesis chapter 1. I want to think about the story of creation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth and everything that's in them. And in Genesis 1, the scriptures introduce us to God, depicting him as the high king of creation. He's good, he's wise, he's benevolent, he's powerful. He commands and creation obeys, right? God said, and it was so, right? And so he is the one in authority. He is the king of creation. He created a good world full of order and beauty and life from wisdom. And the pinnacle of his work in creation, God creates humanity with a profound purpose in his world. God made humanity in his image and appointed humanity to rule over the works of creation. Listen to Genesis 1, 26, just through the end of the chapter, just to hear these words. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image," or humanity, or a human in our image, "according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, or the heavens, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created a human in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Then God said, "Behold, I've given you every plant yielding seed that's on the surface of the earth, every tree that has fruit yielding in it, and it shall be food for you, and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the sky, and to everything that moves on the earth which has life, every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made. Behold, it was very good. There was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. So in short, we look at the picture of creation. We see God as king, king of creation. Humanity is created in his image to rule over creation as his representatives. What I want to do is now in zoom in on this picture. Just summarize the creation story in short. But I want to zoom in and see three critical points that speak to justice that's very important that we see. The first is when we look at God's kingship. Right? We look at creation, we see the kingship of God. We're seeing God as high king of heaven and on earth will do justice and righteousness in the world. Okay. Let's think through that. One, just as a point of background, in the ancient Near East, it was the king's job, it was the king's role to administer justice and righteousness. And that's not a stretch for us because we expect the same thing of our leaders today, right? It's ultimately falls to them to administer justice and righteousness in our society, in our communities, in our nations, right? But this is a special role for the king in the ancient Near East. And God is king in creation. You want a good biblical portrait of this? Take a look at 1 Kings chapter 3 sometime. Go and just read in the beginning of Solomon's reign and think about what he prayed to God when he asked God for wisdom. What did he understand his role to be king was? And to administer justice and righteousness. And then you get a beautiful picture of him doing that when the women come to him for justice. So God as high king of creation is to administer justice and righteousness in the cosmos. But character matters, right? Character matters. Character is essential for those in power and the administration of justice and righteousness. A good king with a heart for justice and righteousness, will administer justice and righteousness, as we see in the reigns of David, if you take a look at 2 Samuel chapter 8, or Solomon, again, if you see 1 Kings chapter 3. A twisted king who's selfish and prideful will promote and propagate injustice and violence, as you see in the reigns of Ahab. Take a look at 2 Kings 21 sometime, the story of Naboth's vineyard. So what's the character of God to rule and administer justice? Now, the whole Bible is going to answer that question, is going to be devoted to answering that question in a lot of ways. But there's some things that we can see even in Genesis 1 to answer that question. What's the character of God? If you just read the creation story, what do we pick up about the character of God? We see goodness and benevolence, right? Think about every day. What's God observing at the end of every day? God saw it was good. You see that in his disposition to see good. But even more clearly, right? Twice in the creation story it says, and God blessed them. What's his posture towards his creation, right? Day 5, he blessed them, said, be fruitful and multiply. Day 6, what he does for humanity, God blessed them. And God said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and rule over it. So we see goodness and benevolence. We also see humble generosity. Notice God as king does not hoard his power, right? We tend to think in terms of power as something that we have to cling to and we have to hoard, but God's not like that. God also does not create subjects just to flatter him with praise or to serve him as slaves. Instead, what's God creating humans to be? To do? To rule, right? To rule. We'll say more about this in a minute. And this picture of God's characters magnifies when we set it in its original context and in dialogue with other creation stories that were going on. You can look at other ancient Near Eastern creation myths and creation stories and realize that the picture of the gods were volatile, were violent, were selfish, were lustful. In other words, the gods were made in the image of humans in those stories. One of the more famous ones and is often set in comparison to Genesis 1 to see the contrast is the Babylonian creation epic, Enuma Elish. And there you've got essentially this war breaking out between the gods. The grandparent gods are angry with their grandchildren because they're loud and they're noisy, and so they want to kill them, right? Like, what in the world? But the younger gods get wind of it and strike first, and the grandfather god is killed. And so the grandmother god in her wrath starts a war against her grandchildren, and then the great god Marduk rises up, kills his grandmother Tiamat, breaks her body in half, and with one half he forms the heavens, with the other half he forms the land, and then kills another god, and from the blood of that god makes humans as slaves to serve the gods. That's crazy, right? But that looks a lot more like human history than Genesis 1 when you think about at least how it's describing history. But Genesis 1 comes along and says, no, that was not the intention. That was not where things actually begin. That was not what this world is supposed to be. Even from that abbreviated, you know, that's shorter than Cliff Notes, but even from that abbreviation, right? Can we see the stark contrast between Genesis 1 and those stories, right? The God of Genesis, our God, the High King of creation, is good. He's not selfish. He's not volatile. He's not just causing war whenever he wants to, whenever he feels like it. We can trust him to administer justice and righteousness. And the Psalms reinforce this, right? The psalmist in Psalm 33 says, he loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the loving kindness of Yahweh. Or Psalm 89 and 97, righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Psalm 111, the works of his hands are truth and justice. So again, God as high king of heaven and earth will do justice and righteousness in the world. But now let's turn from God to see humanity. We look at humanity, made in the image of God. What does that say about human value? Every human, the image of God, is worthy of justice. Listen again. Let us make humanity in our image, according to our likeness. Let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens over the cattle and wild beasts and everything that creeps on the earth. God created humanity in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. We've got to hear this. Every human being, regardless of gender, and when we take Genesis 1 and fill it out and understand what's being said here, regardless of gender, ethnicity, race, rank, socioeconomic status, is made in the image of God, and therefore, and I think we can borrow from Thomas Jefferson, say, endowed with certain unalienable rights. Every human being, male and female, red, brown, yellow, black, white, strong, weak, rich, poor, young, old, citizen and refugee, unborn and dying, has an incredible, immense, inherent value, dignity, honor, worth, and is therefore has the right to be treated with dignity, value, honor, concern, respect. As Psalm 8 says, you've made him, humanity, a little lower than God, and crown him with glory and majesty. What does that say about human value? Right? Again, these words are magnified when we set them in their original context and see them in dialogue with those ancient creation myths. We've already seen the view was that humans were created as slaves to serve the gods, right? To feed them through sacrifice, to let the gods rest because they're royalty and they deserve to rest. Contrast the ethical implications of those opposing worldview-forming origin stories. Right? If you believe every human being is a slave, how will you treat others? Right? If your worldview is we were just made as slaves, how will that shape the way you treat others? But if you believe every human being is royalty and a special representative of God, how will you treat others? Furthermore, in the ancient Near East, kings were often viewed as the statue or the image of the god, right? The king alone, right? Not everyone else, but the single representative of the gods was the king. In the scriptures, as we've seen, that's been democratized. But again, contrast the ethical implications. If you believe the king alone is the image of God, how do you regard wealth and power? How will you treat the vulnerable, the poor, the weak, the powerless? But if you believe every human is made in the image of God, how does that revolutionize the way you view these things and the way you treat others? So again, every human as the image of God is worthy of justice. So when we look at human value, we see something about justice. Even more, or also, right, not just human value, but when we think about human vocation, we'll see justice is central to the human vocation. What is that human vocation? What were humans created to do, called to do, appointed to do? We are made in the image of God and appointed to rule as representatives of God on the earth. And so every human as the image of God then is to do justice and righteousness just as God would. Right? Again, listen to this calling. Let us make humanity in our image. Let them rule in Genesis 1:26. Genesis 1:28, God blessed them. God said, be fruitful, multiply, fill, and rule. Right? So seeing that royal task, that royal vocation, Psalm 8, again, you make him rule over the works of your hands. You put all things under his feet. God is the high king enthroned in heaven. Humanity is appointed as lesser rulers to represent him on the earth. And so implicit in that call is to do righteousness and justice. And how would we rule, though? How would we do that? Because you can define justice all sorts of ways, right? Again, if you believe humanity is slaves, you'll define justice in certain ways. But if you believe they're made in the image of God, that shapes your definition. So how would we rule, right? How should we administer justice and righteousness? Again, character matters. Character matters. If we are to rule as representatives of God on the earth, we must rule as he rules, imitating and embodying his character, taking on his agenda and his values. To say it this way, if God, the high king of heaven, loves justice and righteousness, We, as those representing him, should love justice and righteousness as well. If God's throne is founded on justice and righteousness, we rule over all our small share of creation founded on justice and righteousness as well. If the works of God's hands are truth and justice, what should the works of our hands be? So again, every human as the image of God is to do justice and righteousness. So again, we see in Genesis 1 what we look at about the kingship of God, about inherent human value, about the human vocation. This is going to be the bedrock of the biblical vision of justice. And understand then, justice is not a situational, time-bound command in Scripture, right? When God told Noah to make an ark out of gopher wood, right? That command had an expiration date, right? Some of the commands in the Torah, right? The manual of sacrifice in Leviticus 1 through 7, the instructions for sacrifice, that had an expiration date, right? That's not just a universal command. What God says about justice, though, that's rooted and woven into the very fabric of creation, right? It flows from the heart and character of God and is central for his purpose in his kingdom in creation. That's at least in part why Jesus would say justice is one of the weightier matters of the law. So justice is central to who God is and what his purpose is. Justice is central to who we are and what our calling is. Okay, so that's digging into the roots of the creation story. What I want to do now is step back and just scan the story from creation to Sinai. We won't dig into this with the same depth, but what we're going to do is we're just going to trace a few arcs. As I said at the beginning, right, and we get this from reading the Bible, right? Man, it's a complex story, right? Lots of layers. What I want to do is isolate a few strands of thought, a few story arcs that we can focus in on. The first is that of sin and human rebellion. So when we trace the story of the Bible and just follow that strand of human rebellion, what we could call failed images and evil kingdoms, right? What we're seeing is humanity corrupting the world through injustice. We would throw idolatry as a big category in there too, but we want to especially focus on injustice as central to how humanity's corrupting the world. So think about Genesis 3. What do we see in that first sin? What's going on when Eve eats the fruit? Disobedience? Yes, but it's more than that, isn't it? What's going on in her heart? Right? It's this selfish ambition. What did the serpent hold out in front of her? If you eat this, you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. God's holding out on you. He knows that you can do more if you would just eat this thing. And so it's this selfish ambition to advance, to grow, to gain power, to seize power, but to do it apart from God. And that seed, right, as we trace it through the biblical story, grows into a forest of injustice. Read the story of Cain in Genesis 4 and Lamech in Genesis 4 and the flood in Genesis 6. And what do we see increasing exponentially multiplying, right? Injustice and violence. You see the bitterness and the indignation against Abel by Cain, and then the murder of his brother, right? Cain killed Abel. And even in that statement, what does God say about Abel's blood? It's crying out from the ground, right? Again, showing the sacredness of life, the sacredness of justice. Okay, so we see this murder. When we get to the story of Lamech, what's he doing? He's just collecting wives as if they're property. Then he kills someone over something very trivial and then celebrates it and rejoices it and sings a song about it. But then when we get to the flood in Genesis 6, what's going on? The world is full of what? Of violence. And the thought and intention of everyone's heart is only evil continually, and Noah alone stood out as one who does what? Righteousness. And then continue the story on, and you think about something like even after the flood, you've got Sodom and Gomorrah, right? What's going on in Sodom and Gomorrah? You see that despicable scene of their depravity and their perverseness in Genesis 19, where you've got the attempted sexual violence where all the men in the city come along to beat down the door and attack the two men that are staying with Lot. Right? Even the stories of the patriarchs are so full of cheating and deceit, and then what they do to Joseph, where they the hate that builds up in their heart, and they drag him off, they throw him in a pit, then they throw him off in slavery. And then you think about the story of the Exodus and the people of Israel, Abraham's descendants themselves, becoming victims of systemic injustice, right? Where they're oppressed in harsh slavery and bitter labor. And then you see the population control and the attempted infanticide and all the things that are going on there. And so you trace the story of the failed images of God, their failure, the story of sin, and it's the story of injustice, the multiplication and spread of injustice in the world. But despite all that corruption through injustice, amazingly, remarkably, God does not abandon his purpose in the world or his purpose for and through humanity. So we see another strand is God's kingdom come, right? And God working to bring justice through divine judgment. Think about just a few of these key scenes, right? Genesis 6. Well, first Genesis 3, you get a very cryptic little promise that the serpent will be defeated. But then Genesis 3, and you see the story of God bringing judgment upon evil through the flood. But what do you notice about that? One, he's not allowing evil to just persist. He's dealing with evil. He's going to purge the evil. But what other characteristic do you see about God's judgment there? It's marked by what? Patience, right? Do you see patience in his judgment? That he would allow it to fill up that full before he would render judgment. Or think about the story of Sodom and Gomorrah and God's judgment against Sodom and Gomorrah. He will not allow evil to endure. There's some other things that we see about his judgment there, right? Again, we see patience, his willingness to let it go this far. But that dialogue that he has with Abraham, he would not let the righteous be swept up with the wicked. So there's something about God's justice there. He would not let the righteous be swept up with the wicked. Even more, right? He would withhold judgment if it meant that the righteous might get swept up with the wicked. Even if there were 10 righteous people there, he would hold back judgment. And then we think about Egypt. How did God respond to the injustices that were going on in Egypt? Right? You see him bringing the 10 plagues, rendering judgment on Pharaoh, on Egypt, on their gods through the plagues. But again, that's marked by patience. So we see God as divine judge rendering judgment. The other thing that we see in the Exodus story, as God renders judgment on Egypt, what's he doing for his people? He's rescuing them. He's redeeming them. He's liberating them. And he's bringing them out to relationship with him, to life and fullness and flourishing in his protection and in nearness to him, right? And so in that story, we see the connection between justice, judgment, and salvation, right? These are going to be interlocking terms as well. The last thing that we want to see, another action of God in terms of justice, he's bringing judgment through his own divine judgment, but he's also bringing justice through human agency. This is really important because this is where we come into the story, right? This is our part in the story. In Genesis 12, God calls Abraham. Right? God calls Abraham from his home, and he makes the promises to him. I'll bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you, make you a great nation and all that, give you a great name. And in your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Right? So we see this calling of humanity to be this bearer, this carrier of God's blessing to the rest of humanity, to carry forth that purpose. Look at Genesis 18. Open up your Bibles here. I want us all to see this. In Genesis 18, this is God's conversation with Abraham just before he's going to bring judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah. And he's deliberating. Well, should I tell him what I'm about to do? Right? But listen to what he says in the course of that conversation. Should I tell him what to do? Verse 19, "For I have chosen him so that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of Yahweh by doing righteousness and justice, so that Yahweh may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. Notice, what was the charge given to Abraham? Right? What was that calling given to Abraham? To do righteousness and justice, and to teach his children to do the same, right? You see this big picture of blessing to all the nations, but what does that look like on the ground? Teach your kids to do the right thing. Teach your family to do the right thing. Teach your descendants to do what's right. Right? Notice how the calling to do justice is also tied to the promise. Teach them to do this so that they may receive what I would give them. And notice this, the way it's almost stated incidentally in the text, right, shows us that this is something we should have seen before. He says it explicitly here, but we should have known it implicitly before. To say all this another way, Abraham's calling is to resume the original human vocation, to rule as a representative of God, doing justice and righteousness in the world. From the beginning, that's been God's vision or purpose for the world. That flourishing of humanity, justice and righteousness is going to support that, going to promote that. But notice how he's pursuing this vision one person, one family, one people at a time. And then we get to Exodus 19. And God calls Israel out of slavery. He brings them to himself. He says, I bore you out on eagle's wings and I brought you to myself. And what does God call Israel to be? His royal representatives in the earth. Let them be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. They're now carrying forward what humanity was to be from the beginning, right? These royal representatives of God. And that means doing justice and righteousness. Listen to Deuteronomy 4. As Moses is reflecting on the laws and the commands and the statutes and the ordinances that God gives Israel to guide them in their calling, listen to what he says. Deuteronomy 4, verses 5 through 8. He says, see, I've taught you statutes and judgments, just as Yahweh my God commanded me that you should do thus in the land where you're entering to possess it. So keep and do, for that is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God whenever we call on him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law which I'm setting you before you today? Right? So we hear the calling of Israel that they're to be representatives of God on the earth, that the people are to look at Israel and see something of God, to know something of his ways. And then the law was to inform that and to show them and to guide them in that way. And that the people around them would look on and say, look at their laws, look at the way they live, look at their culture, look at the way they interact with one another and treat other people and deal with the poor and all these kinds of things. And they would look on their laws and say, man, there's no one, no other nation like this that has such wise laws and governance, that has a God so near them or that has commandments so righteous and just. All right. So we've covered a lot of ground today. But we've hovered around one central point, right? Break down everything I've said, and all serves a single point, that justice is central to the purpose of God in his kingdom, and it is so from creation. Justice is central to who God is and what his purpose is. Justice is central to who we are and what our calling is, what our purpose is. Next week, Lord willing, Tyler's going to process some of these things and help strengthen these connections a little bit for us. The next time I get the opportunity to speak, I want to look at some of the laws in the Torah. And we've so far just said, okay, justice is really important, but we still haven't really said, okay, what it is, right? As we look at the laws, that's going to help us understand, okay, this is how God views it. This is how God views justice in a society. And that's where we're going to start to build out our picture a little bit more fully. If you're with us this morning and you need our prayers, if there's anything that we can do for you to encourage you or help you in your walk, we'd love to help you. If you've never given your life to Christ, we'd love to baptize you in the name of Jesus for the forgiveness of your sins. If there's anything we can do for you, please come forward as we stand and sing.